Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Hearts of LNP, brought to you by Late Night Poets at allpoetry.com. The group hosts shows every night of the week on a variety of topics to ensure that there is something for everyone to enjoy. And if you want to support our shows, we do have anthologies available on Amazon, which boasts a wonderful selection of poetry offered up by the poets of our group. And speaking of our poets, with the gracious permission of several of our members, I have brought a reading list tonight for your listening pleasure. I encourage you to come in, find a comfortable seat, and make yourself at home. Along with Versus Goliath, I am happily your hostess, Victoria Frost. Tonight, we're delving into the topic of time, the way that time passes, the moments that are frozen in our memory. It might be an instance, it might be a month, it might be a year, or perhaps it's just an understanding that once those sins have fallen, we can't quite get them back. And so with that, we have several poets, wonderful poetry, that's going to explore this idea of time and the many facets of it. And so with that being said, how are you doing tonight, Versus?
I am fabulous. Thank you for asking. It's been a wonderful evening of just absorbing so much poetry and wonder. Lots
absolutely. We did have a really awesome show right before this one, which was boasting James Bond, which, I mean, who doesn't like James Bond? I'm not a big fan of his, but at the same time, who doesn't like a good Bond movie? So, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's going to be a great night. And we do have a few guests with us tonight. Irish Rose, how are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you for asking.
Oh, wonderful. And absolutely, I'm glad that you're here. I'm super excited. I know you have a piece on the board tonight, so I'm really excited to hear stuff in your own voice. And then we also have the wonderful, the majestical Laurent. Laurent, how are you tonight?
I'm good. Bonsoir. Good evening. How are you?
Bonsoir, mon ami.
Hello. Welcome.
Yes, yes.
Awesome. Well, I'm super excited to get started. So with that, Versus, I'm going to hand it off to you and let you take us away.
Well, Irish Rose, since you were so gracious enough to join us this evening, do you mind reading your poem?
Oh, no, I would be honored to do so. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Begin poem. For 1,000 years, days run away through endless sounds, healing flowing through God's hands, laid stack upon stack, heavy bricks on human backs, deftly threaded through centuries, intrinsic maze. End of poem.
A stunning read and write, Irish Rose. Thank you so much for that. And Laurent, would you mind sharing some thoughts to start us off with?
Absolutely. I always admire a good, solid brevity. And when it can be done in 25 words or less, well, that's skill. Laid stack upon stack, heavy bricks on human backs. Those words say so much about the history of mankind on Earth. I mean, you could take 1,000 years times the endless run of history. Yeah, and she's telling the truth. You know, living on the backs of others, days into years, flowing through an endless time. I thought it was a brevity that encompasses the years wonderfully.
Thank you.
Beautifully said. And it definitely does wonderfully capture years and time passing. So thank you for that. And Versus, what did you think of this one?
I like how with brevities, you have to look at how things are structured, and the pauses in between add more depth to the power of just saying run away could have much more depth. And so I ended up seeing like the pyramids being built to this, and I was thinking runaway slave through endless sands also kind of references an hourglass flowing. And then the flowing through God's hands and how time is that ever-present word of God. And as it's building and building, it's very pervasive with its pressure. It's deftly threaded through centuries, how all of that human sacrifice over time has built up this intrinsic maze. Is this something that is so hard to understand, so complex that we can't even fully wrap our mind around it? So it's a stunning line. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Beautifully said, Versus. And I'm glad that you brought up the pyramids, because as I was listening to Irish read this, I too thought about the pyramids, the way that you have laid stack upon stack, which Laurent also referenced. It does remind you of kind of that building of pyramids, which is, you know, it fits nicely with this idea of sand, because we think of Egypt, sand. But also, it is a reminder that sometimes history and time and the past reach into the present. we may not, using the pyramids as an example, we may not get to see them in their glory. They might be run down now, but they have history there. They are the living embodiment of past. And so what I appreciate about this piece is that, yes, you have those beautiful pauses that give us time to ruminate, days, run away. Because I can say, as a child, I remember waiting for Christmas, and it always seemed like it was so far away. And yet here, as an adult, I sit and go, my goodness, Christmas is like 4 months and 3 days away, not that I'm counting. And it comes by so fast. I remember Christmas last year as if it just happened. And so you're right, days do run away. And we do see the sands slip through the hands of time. And we often say that, you know, when human hands try to hold sand on a beach, it just falls through. And yet you even bring God into this, God who, all-powerful God, who still allows sand to flow freely through his hands, the reckoning or the calling back to the pyramids as laid stack upon stack, heavy bricks on human backs, deftly threaded through centuries. It shows, I'm gonna show the geek in me, but it kind of reminds me of Doctor Who in a way, where he says that time isn't a straight line, it's a big ball of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey. And this piece is kind of a reminder of that, because while history may not be playing out in a way that we can perceive it presently, you know, I'm not going to be able to look at a pyramid and go back to when it was built to watch the pharaohs be buried in them. I still get to see the effect of what happened thousands of years ago. And so I really love this piece because it doesn't only just make you understand that time gets away from us. It's something we can't control and that we can never get back, but it also shows the way in which history and the past force itself into the present, and we still are able to be impacted and to reflect upon it, even though it was thousands of years ago. I think it's just a really stunning piece that looks at time in more than one dimension. So thank you for that. It was a truly stunning write.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And so with that, first is, where would you like to take us next?
I think I'm going to bully the people who called in tonight. Laurent, how do you feel about reading your poem?
I'm all ready.
Yeah, all right. It is going up in the chat if you don't mind giving it a read.
Okay. This is called Continuing Creation. In the question of time, or a reversal to the beginning, where a place is reserved for us at creation's table. The Gratis Fall, Iceland. Cool, blackened bowels of the earth lay silent on the land, vomited from its core, covered by the 150th twisting layer of dark glass and rock, an onyx purple shade that rejects light. Jagged carpet of devil's teeth, newly overrun by color, orange, red, yellow. Not the orange you squeeze, nor the pomegranate split, or the butter yellow in flight, but the boil of the sun on land. An overlay from hell, Dante's Inferno, laid before your eyes, squirming and snaking as if alive, a flood, a river, malign thing that would eat you burnt if it could. Monster from the deep. What mythologies may we not plumb at the sight of a planet's blood? What gods may we then pray to for deliverance? A raw god in reverence of his hammer hand, striking the anvil where he will, while we can but watch his continuing creation 100 million years later. End poem.
Right. Oh, what a stunning, stunning read and write, Laurent. Thank you. And before I hand off comments, I am going to say welcome to the show, Faith. How are you tonight?
Thank you. I had good timing. This was a beautiful poem to start off when I popped in.
So with that, would you like to start us off on comments?
Sure. I thought this was wonderful. I love the color choices to describe things. And the idea of a place being reserved at creation's table is really cool. I love the Dante's Inferno section, and even that there was the pomegranate not long before that, because I always associate the pomegranate with the underworld. Yeah, this was a great piece. It's very eloquent. Well done, Laurent.
Thank you.
Beautifully said. And I love that you even mentioned the pomegranate, because we do think of Persephone with the pomegranate and the life coming from Hades, you know, spring coming and life coming out of death. So that was a really stunning, stunning comment. Thank you. And Irish Rose, what did you think of this?
Oh, I really enjoyed this. I love the imagery, the way you painted it, Laurent. It just really... it really speaks. And jagged carpet of devil's teeth, newly overrun by color. Oh, that's a beautiful, couple of beautiful lines there. And because I live out here in Northern California, where all the fire on earth is, I really identified with this. I'm really sorry, but, you know, when I see something like this, it's like, okay, how far away is it? and this really grabbed me. And Dante's Inferno, for sure, that is Dante's Inferno, yes. And, you know, I just love the descriptive metaphors that you've used here. Dante's Inferno laid before your eyes, squirming and snaking as if alive, and a raw god in reverence of his hammer hand. I always think of Thor, you know, but I really found this to be just really eloquently painted with your word choices and with your original metaphors and imagery, and it really did the justice to the volcano. And I'm glad it's not in California, I'll tell you.
Thank you so much.
Good job. Since it's only about 10,000 miles away from me, I think I'll be fine.
There you go.
That was a beautiful comment, Irish Rose. And you're right, Laurent does have a really beautiful way of kind of capturing this volcano. It's not just a description of it, because he does have those colors, but he also captures the character. He brings it to life with the mythology that we hear about. And so that was that was a stunning comment that I feel really hit on some of the really, really amazing points of this poem. So thank you for that, truly. And Versus, what did you think of this?
I was watching the video a little bit just to enjoy some volcano shooting lava up. Always a fun sight to see, and I believe it's beautifully captured in the poem. It's the layer of dark glass and rock, an onyx purple shade that rejects light. Like being someone in geology, I know exactly what you're talking about, and that's like, it's so cool for me, that that singular layer. And learning about it, like, is such a cool way how the crystals form in order to be like rejecting it, but there's so much visual stuff. Jacket carpet of devil's teeth, new run by color, orange, red, yellow, and then that description, not the orange you squeeze, like more than, nor the pomegranate you split, more than, or the butter yellow in flight, more than, but the boil of the sun on land, just such magnificent heat. Going into mythology. And so I had to look it up, but it was because it was driving me crazy. When I heard hammer hand and striking the anvil, I was thinking of Hephaestus. I'm terrible at pronunciation. But the actual anvil god of Greek mythology, who provides all the weapons for all the gods, I believe, and even the lightning bolt that Zeus uses. So I had this real mythological thing, and I feel like I'm picking up a bit of a double entendre thing going on at the very end. where it may not be just lava that we are talking about. So bringing that to this almost eternal state of 100 million years later, this kind of creation so far out in time. Beautiful. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Beautifully said. And I do agree. There is kind of that idea of Hephaestus, the god of fire, who is creating, and from it, this lava is pulling forth. Stunning comment verses. Thank you. I think what I really appreciate about this is that you remind us that time does not stop creation. So many times we like to think, I mean, look at the Bible. You have creation and then you have history is how it kind of treats it. But if we really look at how the world works, we have volcanoes above land, below sea, volcanoes that are creating and changing the face of this earth. Humans have changed the face of this earth. And so in this piece, you've taken a very prolific volcano that we still get to watch its creation, its mark upon the face of this earth. And so we get to see the layers. We get to see the way that it builds. We get to see that it does not stop. And so for that, I really appreciate it. Yes, you've hearkened back into the lore. You've played with mythology, be it Hephaestus or be it, you know, another god of fire, Dante's Inferno. You create fear and awe and inspiration from something that could be quite terrifying and wrap it up in this beautiful ball of imagery that makes us want to go and explore these lands. And at the same time, be reminded, be marveled by the fact that even today, there is creation, there is change, and there is hope. So, stunning, stunning, right, Laurent?
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. All right, and I think I got everybody. I didn't forget FaZe. So with that, Versus, where do you want to take us?
How ironic that you just mentioned FaZe. When you've created a pattern, you should stick to it. FaZe, would you be okay with reading your poem?
Sure.
Yeah, thank you. It's going up on the trend.
Time by Faziana. Recovering from surgery bends time. Mere moments felt like years between doses. Daylight always wasted asleep, a crime. Blurring of long weeks after diagnosis. Isolation bends patient's reality. Emerge to find that life continued on. Though stillness hid its progression from me, snail-paced hours contradict months quickly gone. Confused chronology jumps ahead blind, youth permanently misplaced amid dreams. Illusion speedometer rules my mind, a roller coaster of whispers and screams. Perplexing how days impatiently crawl, yet seasons leap from spring buds to snowfall. And Paul.
Beautiful read, Faziana, and a fantastic write. Thank you for that. And Versus, would you mind starting us off on this poem?
Absolutely. And this is so interesting in how it describes such a specific moment in time. I never personally had to go through it, but my father went through recovering from a major surgery, and it's interesting how, like, every day became similar routines, and the pleasant moments became the things we could do outside of that kind of routine, because he was mostly bedridden for a lot of it, so it made me think of that. Daylight always wasted asleep, a crime, blurring of long weeks after diagnosis. That idea of, like, and it happens with, like, depression, too, just sleeping through the day and not having, it just doesn't feel very nice. So, like, that feeling of a crime going with it and, all of it is just so powerful. And I really like perplexing how days impatiently crawl, yet seasons leap from spring buds to snowfall. Such a beautiful couplet to end it off. Powerful poem.
beautifully said verses. And she does, I mean, Faith does this beautiful job of bringing lessons from her life into her poetry. And it makes it applicable to us. We may not have been in the hospital as Faith was, but we can see how it impacted family. We can see how time may have stood still for them. So, stunning comment. And Irish Rose, what did you think?
Yeah, I really like the way she expressed this. The story of, you know, I kind of view it. It's like uncoiling a thread, you know, and how the thread keeps coming unwound, till finally it straightens itself out. But it takes some time, and I like the way that she processed that and related it so well. Snail-paced hours contradict months quickly gone. And, you know, I know just from the few times that I've ever had to be hospitalized that, you know, it's like, oh, man, how soon can I get out of this place? And so just the thought of being, you know, in a situation where days are really counted in weeks, that's a mental kind of challenge. And so I think she did a really great job in just laying this out and taking us along so we could just kind of feel what it was like. She did a very nice job. Good job.
Beautifully said, Irish Rose. And she does do a great job of kind of taking us along in this journey that she was on. And, like you even said again, that idea of putting it in a headspace where even someone who may not have been in the hospital as her, because we can't be, we still are able to see and feel and understand how that time slowly unwound. And I love the way that you even said that, the way that it uncoils and unwinds, slowly pulling. Just a really stunning comment. Thank you. And Laurent, what did you think?
Isolation bends patient's reality. Emerged to find that life continued on. Though stillness hid its progression from me. Snail-paced hours contradict months quickly gone. I found this wonderful poem really reflected the subjective empty pace of time in situ. All the while, reality roars by. Months lost to your isolation. Fijiana, I thought this is a superb share. Very well Ben.
Beautifully said, Laurent. And I love that you even mentioned that stanza because it too is one of mine. It reminds us, and I was just waiting for you to mention this, that Einstein always said that a minute next to a beautiful woman or 10 minutes next to a beautiful woman feels like a minute, something like that. But a minute on a hot stove will feel like 10 minutes or an hour or something like that. I'm messing up the quote, but you guys get my essence.
Yeah.
But I feel like that stanza really embodies that, especially that last line, snail-paced hours contradict, months quickly gone. When we are in those moments of boredom, in those places, like Irish Rose said, that we don't want to be, that we want to get out of, it is going to seem like those hours drag on. And yet, when we emerge, life has continued on. Months have gone by. Nobody stops in their path. Things happen. People had memories. They had, get-togethers, parties, good news, bad news. Things happen just because that's what life does, even when ours stops. And so I love that you pointed out that stanza because I feel like it is so poignant. And I feel like the second stanza really does harken down to the last two lines too. Perplexing how days impatiently crawl, yet seasons leap from spring bud to snowfall. There's a gap that's missing there. And it gives me the idea of someone who goes into the hospital in spring and next thing they know, it's winter. Summer has been missed. Fall has been missed. It is a leap. And we are left without those memories, without those experiences, because every day was the same in a room, listening to beeping, listening to the bustle of a hospital, all the while you're stuck in one place. And I think that's what's so poignant about this piece is that you capture this moment in time. You capture the loss that comes with it, the boredom, the desire to move on with life, and the shock. It really puts us in a moment where we understand that, as hard as it is to say, sometimes we are so unimportant in other people's lives that our absence is not always noticed. Or if it is, it's not always conveyed. So to me, it's just a really deeply stunning intellectual piece that really makes us not only examine how time passes, but how much life we often miss out on through isolation. So thank you for sharing this space. It is a stunning rite. And so with that, verses, where are we off to next?
All right, we are off to just taking a second, you know, processing everything about life. I will give this one a read. It is Return to Forever by Daniel Chino. A cold awakening breath from the winter wind reveals an ancient insight as the trees dance to the music of the air. I see the flexibility of all the rhythms of reality, the daily rise and fall of the sun, each day with a different vision, the seemingly eternal message scribed by the stars, edited for each millennial generation, the ebb and flow of love and sorrow, the price of being human, the all-powerful first note of creation, and the unpredictable and inevitable coda. I see music as a reflection of all that's around, not metronomic imperfection, but a harmonious flowing sound. I hear the flora and fauna in an earthly orchestration, and if I listen enough, I feel a peaceful elation. I feel musical virtuosity as a lifelong endeavor. I discover a passionate quest to return to forever. And
like an arrow to the quiver.
Okay, I got stuck on the mute monster that time. Sorry about that, guys. Irish Rose, would you mind starting us off with comments on this one?
Oh, okay. I really like the grandiosity which he opens the first line with, a cold awakening breath from the winter wind reveals. And you're there, you're waiting. What is it? An ancient insight as the trees dance to the music of the air. So it's like you're in this moment of possible creation. And I like the picture goes so well with that kind of, with the line, you know, it's just like, just the gray sky and, you know, it looks a little bit angry. And I like the way he described the rhythms of the flow of the creative process. And the daily rise and fall of nature goes through its time's course. And the eternal message that's always been sent, you know, for however many millennia that we're speaking of. But it's one of these powerful poems that talk about the endless frame of time, that it has no... The continuum is open. It is wide open. And I really enjoyed this. He did a really good job.
Beautifully said, Irish Rose. And I do love that. He does give us that idea that time continues on, life continues on, creation can continue on. Beautifully said. And Laurent, what did you think of this?
I see the flexibility of all the rhythms of reality, the daily rise and fall of the sun, each day with a different vision, the seemingly eternal message scribed by the stars, edited for each millennial generation, the ebb and flow of love and sorrow, the price of being human. I love the message in this poem. And I thought the idea of using love and sorrow to measure time and the listing of the price paid, I just thought was a stunning, stunning phrasing, stunning piece.
Beautifully said. And yes, he does have some really stunning phrases that I feel like you can just kind of sink into and just really reflect on, especially that one, the seemingly eternal message described by the stars, edited for each millennial generation. Beautifully said, Laurent. And Faith, what did you think?
I loved the phrase described by the stars. I kind of feel like that could be like the title of maybe a poem, but maybe a book, Scribed by the Stars. There's something about that that I absolutely love. I found it interesting that at the beginning there wasn't really a rhyme scheme, but then at the end, the second stanza has some really beautiful rhyming, and all of the lines in that one have rhyming couplets. So it was kind of like it tightened up into a form. And it was like a capturing of what was going on. I felt like it was strategic in the way that the form shifted there. So I'd have to ponder that a little bit more about what he was going for there. But it seemed to me like it was an intentional shift, because they went from the lines being different lengths and different endings to it being more uniform at the end there. And I don't know. I'd have to look at it some more, but I felt like he made some cool choices there.
Oh, he absolutely did. And I agree. I too really like how he kind of goes from this free form to a rhyme scheme, because I think it highlights kind of this personal reflection. So beautiful comment. And I love that you pointed that out, because I think it is poignant and powerful for the piece. So thank you for that, Faith. And versus having read it, what did you think?
Oh, it was fantastic. The ebb and flow of love and sorrow, the price of being human, the all-powerful first note of creation, and the unpredictable and inevitable coda. The musical metaphor inscribed throughout is fantastically done. And then it was very fun to read. I kind of lost myself a beat, but it has just such a well-written flow, and the next part, not metronomic perfection, but a harmonious flowing sound. I hear the flora and fauna and earthquake orchestration. I feel musical virtuosity as a lifelong endeavor, a passionate quest to return to forever. This, like, very spiritual rhyme scheme and flow is very well done, and it's a pleasure to read.
Beautifully said. And you're right. He does have this beautiful way of not just setting us up with great imagery, but then ending it in that rhythm and that flow and the rhyme really kind of settles us into this beauty and vibrance that he's kind of latching onto. So thank you for that comment, Versus. That was fantastic. I appreciate what Faye said, because I'm a kind of person who sometimes I'm a little too critical of rhyming. It's not that I can't do it, but I always wonder why people, if someone goes from a perfect rhyme to an imperfect rhyme, my first question is why? And then in this instance, going from a free verse to a rhyming, why? And I feel much like what Faith was saying, because I want to sit in it and ruminate in it and stew in it and understand why we went from a free verse to a rhyming to finalize the poem. And so these are my thoughts. The beginning of the poem is kind of setting up this idea of the world. It's setting up kind of what he's recognized, what he's seen in the world, in the universe, the way that life goes on day by day by day, and how the world shifts and changes, maybe not because of what is actually happening. So the stars may not actually be editing themselves for the next generation, but the next generation is finding personal meaning in the stars that the previous generation didn't for whatever reason. And so that second stanza, the final portion of the poem to me, reads a lot like someone who is looking at the world and finding their own meaning. It's easy to get lost in a cold winter. It's easy to look at the stars and find your own rhythm and your own music in the world. But it's also very easy to feel disconnected and as if your life doesn't matter. And so I appreciate that almost every single line in that second stanza, compared to only one line in the first stanza, start with I. And only one line in the second stanza does not contain an I. And so it's I see music in as a reflection of all that around. You know, I hear the flora and the fauna in an earthly orchestration. And if I listen enough, I feel a peaceful elation. I feel musical virtuosity as a lifelong endeavor. I discover a passionate quest to return to forever. He has found purpose in this world that changes and flows, that we don't always get to dictate. He's found purpose. He's found beauty. There is a joy in life that he gets to see in his day-to-day that's all around him, not because he is doing something important, not because he is orchestrating this or conducting this orchestra. He is merely appreciating the world for its beauty and finds that he wants to find his place, that he wants to find his moment and be a part of this forever, be it the Earth's history or become a no name or what have you. He has a reason. He has a quest. And it is because he sees the beauty of this changing world that adapts to us, even if we don't always adapt to it. Just a really, really beautiful write. So thank you for sharing that, Daniel, and thank you for that fantastic read verses. And with that, where are you going to take us to next?
I'm going to take us to a good friend of LNP, Mr. Poetic Picasso, also known as Frank. Sorry.
Huh. Before I play the SoundCloud, because I got stuck on the mute monster, I do want to thank Frank because he did provide a SoundCloud, and we do always love it when people can actually, if you can't call in, a SoundCloud is the second best because we love to hear artists work in their own voice. And so just for whoever is listening, if you'd ever like to share a piece, but you're not quite sure you're ready to call in, if you provide a SoundCloud, that is always second best because we are never going to be able to read a piece quite like how you intend it. And so that allows us to hear it as you intend. So with that being said, here is Frank's SoundCloud.
I stare from the solitude of my windowsill nearby into the somber clouds of the topaz sky imagining the moments of my life when I was truly vain, but they seem to have vanished into the wind. All I have left to embrace are memories of yesterday when we frolicked in the auburn leaves of autumn, the cherry blossoms of the unforgettable days of spring, with the sparrows by the placid gardens of mazes. Now, these days I had cherished abated then, and the only vestige of their purity is your beauty, as I still walk endlessly within the gardens again, searching for the fresh petals of fallen blossoms in a heap. I think about the gaiety seen in our sparkling eyes revealed, in how much we bonded with the harmonies of nature in a special place where we knew of its magical secrets, and we enjoyed the adventure of the setting of our fairy tale. A time where we were free like two hummingbirds, we flew together into the celestial edges of a heaven when time did not matter, nor was it our real concern, for we were the faithful keepers to this unique place. Behold the image of children playing in the spacious garden. If you look closer, you will see the clear faces of persons that have grown into the guises of the lovers of a forsaken fate. Those faces of you and me, two souls lost in a thick mist. Lost with the time of innocence when we had breathed romance. I was like a big child dreaming about the chapters of our love. Oh, I was like a big child dreaming about the chapters of our love. About the chapters of our love. End of poem.
Stunning read by Franck, a.k.a. Poetic Picasso, in a stunning write. Thank you for that. And again, SoundCloud, yes. So with that, Laurent, would you mind starting us off with what you thought of this?
He said he'd be right back.
Oh, did he? Oh, okay. He still showed on here. I missed that. Well, thank you, Laurent, for hanging out with us. Oh, no, he says he needs a few minutes. Okay, he'll be right back. Still, thank you for hanging out with us. I appreciate it, Laurent. Okay, so Faze, would you mind starting us off then?
Sure. I liked, we flew together in the celestial edges of heaven when time did not matter, nor was it our real concern. Because when you're, like, really living in the moment, Time doesn't matter. You know, so many times we're either focused on, like, where we've been or where we have to go, and we're worried about, like, what time it is. But if you're, like, truly just enjoying the moment with someone, you lose track of that. You have no idea what time it is anymore. And I think that really captures the bond that he had here, because they just were, like, in their own little fairy tale world and forgot about everything else. It was, like, you know, they were the only people in the world. And that just really emphasizes the feelings and the chemistry between them.
Beautifully said, Faith. And I love that you even pointed out that it's like they're in their own little world. Because I think sometimes with the right person or the right moment, you really can kind of be in your own little world. Time freezes around you and nothing matters but that person. So beautifully said. Beautiful comment. Thank you. And versus, what did you think?
So this is another beautiful write from Frank. I appreciate it immensely, especially of the topaz sky. Imagine he finds interesting ways to speak different colors. When we saw it in the auburn leaves of autumn, it just flows so beautifully. Let's see. What was it? Oh, I really love how there's this interwoven, like, secret place that only they know about, and they're capable of going to where time doesn't matter, and they're, like, floating like two hummingbirds, which is, I don't know, in and of itself a very beautiful picture. If you've ever seen hummingbirds just fluttering by, it's just so amazing to watch. And to have a love like that is, I think, a beautiful dancing, like, constantly moving one is what I imagine. And he chose a song from Big, which is Goodbye, and I can't see the rest of it, but it feels very much like a farewell song. But in Big, it's a child living like a grown-up, and this whole poem kind of carries that feeling of a child living in a grown-up's body, kind of reminiscing about the past, so, or perhaps dreaming of a future. There's that sort of in between of, like, not knowing, sorry. At least I do not know, and I don't even know what I'm talking about, so. Thank you very much, Frank. It's a wonderful poem.
You say you don't know what you're talking about, but you really, I think, caused some enlightenment there, because I actually, judge me how you wish, I don't think I've seen Big, and so the fact that you said that it's like this child living in an adult's body really does kind of fit well, especially with those final lines where he says, I was like a big child dreaming about the chapters of our love. So thank you for sharing that verses, because I think that is extremely enlightening. So thank you. And Irish Rose, what did you think?
Oh, I'm really, I've been studying this a little bit, and I really like the way that this has unfolded. He is in a moment where he is reminiscing, and he is in an emotional setting also. In the first stanza, he's in an emotional setting where the moment is somber, it's alone, solitude. I stare from the solitude of my windowsill nearby into the somber calm of the topaz sky. And now he's imagining the moments of his life when he was truly willing. Fame is willing. But they seem to have vanished into the wind. So right there he states, all is gone. Everything went away. And then he goes and he reminisces and he goes through the recollection of the season and of his memories and of the days they shared together and they cherished and all the things that they did together within the gardens again. And he was recalling how everything was just nearly perfect, but not quite. And he continues on, I think about the gaiety scene in our sparkling lives. And he remembers, you know, the emotional inhabitation of how it is you're feeling. You know, when you're in love, you're just like, oh, everything is just beautiful and touching and glorious and special and how they enjoyed the adventure of all of that. And they were two hummingbirds. They were nearly angels in heaven, you know. And he keeps going on, and behold, then he gets into the part, this is serious, you know, the image of children. Oh, he's terribly in love. If you look closer, though, you will see the clear faces of persons that have grown into the guise of the lovers of a forsaken fate. That's where it gets a little bit dark. Those faces of you and me, two souls lost in sickness. Now they're lost. They're not together anymore. Lost. Lost with time of innocence. When we breathe romance. And I was like a big child. Maybe he wasn't mature. Dreaming about the chapters of our lives. I really enjoyed this. This was really well done. And I loved the deliberate pace he set throughout the entire read, and it was very controlled and very somber, and the message was quite clear in that silence of the way he delivered it, and his voice and the timbre So I really enjoyed this. I give him kudos for this. Very clever.
Oh my goodness. Right. That was such a stunning comment, Irish Rose. Thank you for that. I mean, I don't know that there's anything left for me to say after that. But you're right. He does do this beautiful job of capturing the relationship, not just in a moment, but across the seasons, from the daydreaming to the understanding of loss to perhaps even the acceptance that, you know, being a child, just dreaming of the chapters of the love, you know, he does a beautiful job bringing us through this entire journey. So thank you for that very thorough comment. It was stunning.
Thank you.
Well, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know that I can really add too much to it because Irish Rose just hit it out of the park. But I, Frank always, I think he always lives up to his name as Poetic Picasso. You know, he creates these beautiful stories, beautiful images with his words and even his performance. You know, what I think I got the most out of this, though, was that so often when we relive our memories, we are reliving these frozen moments of time, kind of like daydreaming.
Right.
Like Irish Rose really mentioned, looking out the window and looking at a plot of land, perhaps, and remembering a memory that happened there, watching it play out. There's that sadness and the beauty of it that we recognize is gone, and yet we still cherish it. I like that he brought in that they were free like two hummingbirds, because if you've ever watched a hummingbird, it kind of flits about, like they fly so fast. I have hummingbirds around here, but they seem to pop up out of nowhere, and you kind of get to watch them in their moment, and very quickly they seem to pop up in another position because they move so fast. And if you think about that in the context of a lost relationship, it can be like those memories that pop up and then fly away. They seemingly disappear. Perhaps you don't know how you got from point A to point B. You were just there and it was great in the moment until suddenly it came to that end and they disappeared and you're left just kind of wondering where they went. And those last two stanzas, behold the image of children playing in the spacious garden. If you look closer, you will see the clear faces of persons that have grown into the guises of the lovers of a forsaken fate. Those faces of you and me, two souls lost. And then, ending it with, I was like a big child dreaming about the chapters of love. That stanza before the end to me really speaks of the way that we come together with the people in our life. You know, I don't really have any friends left from childhood. I didn't have any friends in childhood to begin with, which is a whole nother story. But I know that there is a lot of people who I went to elementary school with that are still friends with other people today. Some of them grew together. You hear about best friends getting married. Other people date and then they fall apart. But that stanza to me really speaks of how we grow and how our relationships weave together, and suddenly we start to understand that this coming together doesn't always work, that sometimes we so desperately want these relationships, but they just fizzle out. You're not compatible, it's the wrong time, and it's like getting stuck, lost in thick mist. You know they're there, but you just never seem to connect. And so with that, if we look at it, and I love the maturity comment that you made, but we could also look at, you know, I was like a big child dreaming. If you think about it in that respect, it's still that childhood hopefulness of what their love could have been. But time has lost that innocence. They had tried romance once. They didn't meet. And now he's left dreaming of what it could have been. If only they'd not gotten lost. Stunning, stunning poetry. I'm sitting here with goosebumps. I just love Frank's work. So thank you for that, Frank. Thank you so much for the SoundCloud. It is just stunning always to hear a work in the poet's own voice. And so I appreciate Frank and everyone for their beautiful comments. I don't believe Laurent is back yet. And so with that, Versus, where are you going to take us to next?
Going back.
I have posted up.
Oh, Laurent is back. Laurent is back. Laurent, did you get to hear Frank?
I've only had a chance to glance at it. I'm going to leave a written comment later.
That's perfect. Okay. So with that being said, Versus, where are you taking us?
If you could read the poem that is posted up into the chat, I would be so appreciative. By you, I mean Victoria.
Absolutely. I'm not on mute. I'm just getting settled. Got to get my blanket. It's starting to get cold up here in the Northwest, so I'm once more returning to my huddle of blankets.
Well,
okay.
Send it off.
Hey, the east side, yes, east side that my parents are on is much like California and up in flames as well, but nobody talks about Washington when it catches on fire. So I feel you to some degree, and I'm sending all the love, Irish Rose. Keep you safe. All right. This is Handmade of Time. I feel beautiful like steel feels it, or as a diamond does. Touch me often, it shines me. Tell me I am radiant in sunshine. Use me at my worth. I will hold you up beside me, a girder of strength. But neglect me, slowly I will abrade parts of me as rust with touch. Or I may be a sharp-edged shard of a shell, cut you with touch. Never nuanced but gold as steel and diamond, unapologetic in pain or in joy. As beautiful as you choose to see, and I choose to feel. End poem. Oh, what a stunning, stunning poem by Becky Upchurch. And Versus, would you start us off with some thoughts?
I think there's some tremendous metaphor in here, and this is going to be one of those ones where it sucks to be the first one to comment because there's so much to dig through. It's going to need like a second read. But I really like the idea of forged steel and diamond, touch me often. It shines me, that idea of being kind of carved into a glittering gem, to be shining in the light, and to become the support of one's strength. I'm trying to connect in the Handmaid of Time with it, and I feel that like overarching idea of the metaphor, but I can't fully grasp onto it in the moment. It talks about becoming sharpened, cutting the one, and then in that ending, never nuanced but bold as steel and diamond, unapologetic in pain or in joy, as beautiful as you choose to see, and I choose to feel. There's like a lot of power to the sharpness spoken about and leading up to the stanzas to it. And there's just something I can't fully connect between the two, but I can feel the sharpness being part of the metaphor. And it's a powerful piece. And they talk about having mental battles that they are going through. So perhaps this is part of their process through time, what they've seen, because with Handmaid you think of like serving. So I apologize that I can't fully digest it at the moment, but it's a beautiful ride.
No, I think that was a stunning comment. And if I might expand upon it, from what I gleaned from what you're saying is that so often we are at the beck and call of time. If we look at her author's note, you know, she's dealing with the mental battles and physical battles. And so this can be like the polishing or the sharpening or the chiseling of a diamond. It's not pleasant. It's not fun. And yet each day we get up and we do it over and over again because that's what we must do. I think that's a stunning thought because it's easy to play victim and to lament the position or the hand of cards that we've been given in life. And sometimes it's just something beautiful about saying, this sucks, but you know, I might be able to become a diamond out of it, or a beautiful steel, length of steel that is hard and resilient. So beautifully said verses. And I am going to pause for just a moment. It does look like Irish Rose had to go. So thank you, Irish Rose, for joining with us tonight, for sharing your beautiful words and your fantastic comments. It was truly a joy to have you on air. And so with that, Laurent, would you mind commenting on this piece?
Certainly. This may, I don't know if this is the first poem I ever read by Becky Upchurch, but got to be one of the first ones that I read, and I was absolutely impressed with the piece at the time. I told her that she did herself proud with the poem, and she does herself proud in life, because when you suffer chronic pain and other ills, it can make every single day torturous. You can grow tired with life. You know, a machine that's running well and good repair can last forever. But if you neglect it and let it sit, disuse will dull its senses, its edges. She communicates that so well here. You have to start the machine every day. You really do. And let it run. It's the only way to keep it in good shape. So God bless her. Great poem.
And that was a great comment. Especially I like how you kind of harken it back to a machine. Because I actually think of my parents' old tiller for the garden. They've had it since before I was even born. So I think they've had it for 40 years. But because they've taken care of it, it still runs beautifully. It runs better than probably when you can get in the store. Doesn't mean that it's not cleaned up. Doesn't mean that it doesn't need a little bit of maintenance. But it was taken care of. And when you neglect things, it's just the same. It doesn't last as long. It falls apart. It becomes worthless and worthless. So that shows her starting the machine, doing it over again, even if it's not pleasant. Because sometimes that's what you do. So, sending comment off. Thank you so much. And Faith, what did you think of this?
I kind of saw it as if time is treating you well, if you have good times, then it ends up like shining you and making you capable of being your best self. If you're told that you're radiant in the sunshine, then you're capable of holding other people up too. And when time... When you go through bad times, it does, you know, sharpen you. You sometimes have your backup, you have your shell around you, and you're not so soft and welcoming necessarily. So having good times and having bad times does affect you. But it does seem like she manages to get past that and still have the soft side, like as if time has been kind to her, even when it hasn't. I thought this was a great show of strength.
I guess Victoria might have dropped.
I just got back. Now there's two of me in the show. So
who's Victoria? No one knows.
Okay, so quickly, from what I got to hear of James's comment, I think that was really funny. Because you're right, whether life is going our way, whether we're in perfect health, whether we're, you know, going through the darkest times, it's easier to go through any time, good, bad, and different, when we have those positive times behind us. If we are in a long period of where we're dealing with negativity, you know, a lot of struggles, it's harder for us to be around people, to be dealing with, you know, one bad thing after the next. It plays a toll on us. And so I love that you took it as experiences, if I understood you correctly. I love that you took it as experiences because I think that is so poignant. So often we allow an experience to impact us. And like, you know, personal experience, I just had a friend of 14 years pass away unexpectedly on Thursday. In fact, his wife is filing a unlawful death. What is it? it was lack of medical care. It was inappropriate medical care that hit him. And so his wife is actually speaking to a lawyer tomorrow about a lawsuit. And this has not been a great year. And so historically, it might not be in a great history, but because I've gotten to have some positive things lately, I handle it a little better than, like, say, back in March when my best friend lost the baby on my birthday. It's the positive moments in our lives that kind of impact us and help us to be more resilient versus the times when the hard things just keep hitting. So I think that was such a stunning and poignant comment, because it looks at the heart of people and how life affects us, how time affects us, and how moments affect us. Thank you for that, Faith. That was a stunning comment.
What I really liked about this is that you can look at it as time, but you can also look at it as relationships. The idea of someone who makes you feel beautiful, who is present with you, who compliments you, who understands and appreciates your worth, they are the ones that hold you up. They are the ones that give us strength because they help us see our beauty. But when we are neglected, when we've been shoveled into a dirt or shoveled into a wall or left to sit in a corner in a puddle, those are those moments when we feel neglect. And those are those moments that harden us. And so I appreciate this poem because we can look at it as what Faith was saying about how time can impact us. We can look at it as how we overcome physical and mental issues that chronically impact our day-to-day life. Or we can look at it how relationships impact us as well, because relationships are going to help carve and define us. Time helps carve and define us. Experiences help carve and define us. And your sharpness does not necessarily mean that you are bad. Bad things happening to you does not mean that you are unworthy. You can still share that same joy. You can still cause unapologetic pain. But ultimately, I love that in the end, she chose to feel beautiful. She chose to feel, because sometimes it's easier to want to hole up and pretend that the world doesn't exist, that we are alone and play that victim, but we don't always have to be the victim. So I think this is just a beautiful and dynamic piece. And as Laurent said, definitely made her proud. At least it should have been. So beautiful poem, Becky. Thank you so much for letting us share this. And thank you everyone for your fantastic comments. And with that, Versus, where are you going to take us?
All right. I am posting the next one up into the chat if Laurent is still here and would like to read it.
I'll be happy to.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. We have Timeless Pleasure by Gerald Green. We huddled around the campfire near the top of the hill behind the camper under clear autumn sky. Smoke rose, a translucent dancing statue, making the stars twinkle. In a few hours, water would freeze. I watched my friend pick up his steel rod with brass handle and adjust the small teepee of burning wood inside the iron ring. It made me wonder why poking fire and moving white embers makes one content. Is there a need to control, however small and unrecognized? Or is it a latent sense of responsibility? While pondering and ignoring the six friends around me, my wife handed me a golden marshmallow still attached to a wire, reminding me what camping is for, replacing timeless thought with timeless pleasure. End poem.
Beautiful read, Laurent. Thank you so much. And Faith, would you start us off with comments on this one?
Well, this really makes me nostalgic for the times when fire was a good thing. I thought this was really thought-provoking, because why do we feel so good poking the fire? And maybe it is that sense of control. Like right now, fire feels out of control for me, so it's like a frightening thing. But usually I love sitting around the campfire, so maybe he has a point there about it being a control thing. But I really like when his wife hands him the marshmallow and he thinks timeless thought is replaced by timeless pleasure, and that, I mean, camping can be good for both things, in my opinion. It can be like the place where you have the ability to think because all the outside noise is gone, or it could be where you choose to just not think and let yourself just enjoy the moment. I thought this was a beautifully reflective piece and just captured that moment of sitting around the fire and just thinking. It was something really powerful about staring into a campfire. It's like, I don't know, it always gets me thinking, so I really related to this.
That was such an awesome comment, Faith. I truly love that you not only mentioned just the control thing, because, you know, fire was kind of like the first like real survival thing, especially when you're stuck in the wilderness. Being able to control fire is so important, especially with what you're going through with the fires around you. It can feel out of control and it can feel scary. And it's those moments where we realize just how powerful fire is, not when it's contained and we're poking and prodding it, but when it's ravaging the areas around us. So I love that thought, but I also love how you really mentioned that camping is that time where you can have those deep thoughts, where you can reconnect with yourself and with nature without distraction. But it can also be those times for pleasure, those times where you make memories, eating s'mores, or going down to the lake and catching fish with your grandpa. It can be those moments of pleasure that just don't need anything but to be. So thank you for that stunning comment. And Versus, what did you think of this?
I really like Laurent's read of it. Thank you for reading it. And the writing is amazing. The beginning just brings you to a moment. And I think this whole idea of making one moment timeless is beautifully laid out and done, where you are capable of seeing everything that is made out. And then it has that like philosophical questioning, and I've been caught up in moments too where it's like there's all these people around you, but you're just kind of thinking to yourself, and you get brought back into that moment. And I think he captures that idea very beautifully. And there's something to like the golden marshmallow, that almost perfectly cooked marshmallow being handed to him, that makes it just like it's all very picturesque and well penned. Thank you very much for sharing.
Absolutely. I have to comment though, because you mentioned the golden marshmallow, and I agree. There is nothing better than a perfectly roasted golden marshmallow. Unless you're a heathen and like to burn your marshmallows, blow the fire out, and then shove them scalding hot in your mouth. I don't know why some people like that, but some people do. But that was a stunning comment. Thank you so much, Versus. And Laurent, having read it, what did you think of this?
I liked it quite a bit, as a matter of fact. He gives us a vision of flame, which I think is so basic to the human animal, going back as far as our ancestors can go. They worshiped fire. Fire chased the darkness when the night was filled with eyes. Fire warmed them, cooked their food, made civilization possible. And I think we look at fire with that sense of wonder and unconscious realization, as you mentioned, of its power, of its might. And then he graces us with a childlike delight. How we're all, what, 2 years old when we had our first marshmallow over a campfire? And that little halo of flame that surrounded it, and we had to be told not to to blow it out first before we swallowed it. I mean, I can remember that moment. And that is a timeless pleasure. So it addresses the sense of time very, very well, but it also brings us back in time, I think, to the early days when we worshiped flame.
Oh, that was such a stunning comment. And I do love that you bring in that olden days, that time when fire meant life. It meant food. Or it could even be that childhood where it brings back the memories of being 2 years old and getting to enjoy a marshmallow over a fire for the first time, because there is something just magical about that. He really does have this beautiful way of pulling us in multiple directions, but cohesively, to where we get to appreciate the might of fire, the history of it, and yet even our own experiences, be it as young as 2 or as old as, 50, 60, 90, 30, however. That was just a stunning comment, Laurent. Thank you for that. What I really liked is that it starts off kind of huddled around the campfire, which reminds me kind of like cavemen huddling around the campfire in the dark of night. The autumn sky might be going, but there's that smoke that's rising. It starts with the appreciation of fire, almost in a way that is primal to us. We know that it's cold. In a few hours, water would freeze. And so they huddle together around the fire. And his friend picks up a prod and pokes at the wood, and it makes him think. And that isn't that the way that philosophy usually starts? It's not that we're sitting there and all of a sudden a thought pops through our head. And I'm sure there's times that actually happens, but often it's prompted by something. And with his, it's that question of why do we poke fire? Why does it make us content? And I actually thought about that as I listened to everyone else speak and as I listened to this poem being read. And I would say that there's always that idea of stoking the fire to keep it going, to keep it hot. We move those pieces around so that the flames get to lick and consume all the little pieces of wood or paper or wax or whatever you throw in there to keep it going, to give it the best opportunity to feed. Because with heat, there is life. And yet, it's also sometimes when the fire has died down and the embers are just kind of glowing in their heartbeat that we get to appreciate the life of the fire and poking it to see if we can stoke it back to life, even in those dying embers. There's just contentment, possibly control. Or perhaps it's just the will to survive in a harsh environment. And I feel like that thought is kind of captured in his technically third to last stanza. Is there a need to control, however small and unrecognized? Or is it a latent sense of responsibility, kind of guarding this thing that you brought to life, making sure that it doesn't get out of control? Because I, too, remember going to the national park, and they always said, don't leave your fire. One ember can start a forest fire. So you sit and you watch and you poke to make sure all of it is dead. Is it that responsibility? Is it control, or is it fear? And I love that all of this pondering makes him ignore 6 friends around him, that his wife handing him that golden marshmallow, drawing him back into the present, to the beauty of this moment. It reminds him that camping, that fire, that these moments, while they are timeless, they're also precious. They're pleasurable. They can be repeated in their own ways. And while no 2 marshmallows will ever be the same, each time you get to eat one, you get to go back to the first, the second, and the last. You get to relive those moments. And that's where that pleasure comes from, connecting with the past, be it the cavemen huddled around a campfire, or as Laurent said, the 2-year-old munching on ooey-gooey golden marshmallows. Just a really beautiful piece by Gerald. So thank you, Gerald, for sharing that. And thank you, everyone, for your fantastic comments. I am going to hop off for just a second because my doppelganger got bored with us, and so she dropped. So I'm going to call right back in. But with that being said, Versus, do you mind posting the next link up and we'll keep the show going while I call back in?
Sounds like a plan. Well, I'm going to go ahead and post this one into the chat and then Faze, if you don't mind giving it a read for us.
Of course. Yeah. Another Yellow Tomorrow. This is by Julie Buck. Another Yellow Tomorrow. What matters the faded summer sunset of our butterscotch bond when the only master of our destiny is time? Must I bow to the clock and wallow in weepy raindrops and have my heart break like shards of glass that shred our future into only pieces of remembrance? Please pull at my heartstrings, awaken the trapped in me. For only by galloping from such sorrow will I be able to face another yellow tomorrow. End poem.
Beautiful read, Faze. Thank you so much for that. And Versus, would you mind starting us off with comments?
Absolutely. I really love all of the descriptive language in this. Faded summer sunset of our butterscotch bond. The question, will the only master of our destiny is time? And the idea of bowing to the clock and to be dealing with the one sorrow, it goes into so many different aspects of remembering and being broken, unfortunately, but to be able to face it into another sunny tomorrow. It's such beautiful phrasing, I feel like. For only by galloping from such sorrow will I be able to face another yellow tomorrow. That rhyme scheme just has such hope to it. So it's a really stunning piece. I like it.
Beautifully said, Versus. Thank you for that. And you're right. They do have this beautiful rhyme scheme at the end that really kind of sticks with you. And I think that's kind of intentional, but we think about it and we ruminate upon it. Beautiful comment. Thank you. And it looks like Laurent has dropped. So I'm going to say thank you, Laurent, for hanging out with us. I hope you sleep well. But it is always such a joy to have you on the show here with us and reading with us and sharing your beautiful thoughts and words. So with that, I'm going to find my way back to the poem. I had to read this one quickly because Faze was reading it as I was calling back. But what I really appreciated is that it reminds us that so often we can enter into the uncertainty. Who hasn't been in a relationship, no matter the amount of time, and questioned it and had those negative thoughts and had the fears kind of creep in? I think everybody does. Be it with friends, with lovers, with family, there's always that hidden fear that things aren't always what they seem. And to me, this reminds us that the real destiny of any relationship, family, friend, lover, is time. I have friends who I've known. I mean, you know, I'm old enough now that as much as I don't have childhood friends, I have long-standing friends. And as much as it is hard to lose people, be it them wandering out of your life or because of something bad happening, if we sit and we dwell upon those things, sit and we dwell upon the friendships that we don't necessarily feel are perfect, or the lovers that, you know, don't quite understand us, or the family that doesn't feel that we are living up to their standards and expectations, it would darken the day. It would add a burden. But if we understand that things are not overcomable, or things if we understand that things are overcomable, that there's no such thing that isn't overcomable, we truly wish, then truly the only thing that dictates when a relationship will end is time. That there's nothing in our power that is going to change how something will go. I mean, yeah, there's things. Like if my ex-husband hadn't had four affairs, I'd probably still be married to him. But it doesn't mean it was a healthy relationship even then. But if we choose to focus on sorrow, each day is always going to be dragged down by it. Each day is always going to have that fear of, is this the day that my heart will break? Is this the day that I'm going to watch a future shatter? Is this going to be the day when the clouds weep raindrops upon me? But if we choose to forego that, then we get to face the next day a little brighter. And I love that they specifically said yellow, because yellow is not a color that I think most people would attribute with depression. I actually saw a thing that was like, you know, when people like purple, they like purple, like everything's purple. But if you like yellow, it's pretty much your whole personality. And I see that with my four-year-old who constantly tells me, Mommy, my favorite color is yellow. And it's true. She's bright and she's vibrant and she wants to laugh and she wants to have fun. And she doesn't get stuck in moments of sadness. I mean, she has her moments, but she doesn't get stuck in them, because so quickly as moments of sadness come, they're wiped away. And she's back to giggling and finding joy and finding happiness. And so I love that it speaks of the day, not just as sunshine or sunny or bright or bubbly, but as yellow. Because when you think of yellow, you think of gold and you think of joy and you think of butterscotch and you think of vibrancy and happiness. And it shows the contrast sorrow could bring. So really beautiful, stunning write by Julie Buck. And Faith, having read it, what did you think?
I liked it. I liked, like shards of glass that shred our future into only pieces of remembrance. You know, for a future to break, meaning it's just memories, and that's all you'll have, is kind of a common theme, but the way that she words it there, I thought had a fresh kind of feel to it. I enjoyed that. And I have to say, I love the picture that she chose, where she's playing the harp on the antlers of the stag. I don't know, it's absolutely gorgeous. And her color choices really went well with that image, but it's not dependent on the image to bring it to life. Our butterscotch bond was interesting. It's a nice play of alliteration. This was beautifully worded, and I thought that it was well constructed.
And that was beautifully said, and I agree. She did do a beautiful job picking the picture to go onto this piece. It feels magical and mystical and lighthearted and happy. So thank you for sharing that, Faith. And thank you, Julie, for allowing us to read your words. All right, and verses, where are you going to take us to now? We have about 25 minutes left.
All right, I am posting one up into the chat now that I will take a stab at. This is called Time Stood Still, Value, Homeostasis. Winded while at a standstill, breathless, the standard to win with integrity. I felt like I lost my life for a split second, so I'm at a loss of words. Give me time to recollect what happened before the impact. Think before I speak. Speak less to respect the flow of nature and regain the balance with this life force and trust that I won't fade away. End song.
Beautiful read verses. Thank you so much. And a fantastic write by Cyclone. I think what I really appreciate about this, it was written about a year ago. And what I really think about this is that so often, not trying to get political, but so often there are people in life and in society who have been treated as if they are expendable, and they aren't. to me, this speaks not only as someone who is willing to fight against fading into time, but someone who understands that they understand loss. They understand the way that a death can impact them, even if it is someone of their culture, someone of their family, a friend. There's that moment when reality hits and it sends such a deep message. And so I love here that he said, let me see if I can find it. Give me time. Recollect what happened before the impact. Think before I speak. Speak less to respect the flow of nature and regain the balance with this life force and trust that I won't fade away. There's been so much turmoil between the lost children of the Native community with the with Black Lives Matter that's been going on. We are starting to see how many people were truly lost. They were unimportant, not because they did anything wrong, but because, again, society saw them as expendable. And so I love this piece because of its boldness, because there's wisdom in it. There's an understanding of how this has affected him and also how he is not going to be quiet, that he will not be lost, that he will not fade away, be it with his life or with his voice. He stands and he speaks with thought and with wisdom. And so I think it's so poignant the way that he's captured this. So stunning, right? And Faith, what did you think of this piece?
I love the beginning. It really grabbed me. Winded while at a standstill. And that shows that it's not a physical kind of winded. It's like something has shocked you so much that it's just like the circumstances emotionally leaves you breathless. And I love the way that the end is in all caps and it has the spacing. I won't fade away. It's a very strong statement, and maybe saying it to himself, maybe saying it to society or to someone in his life, but choosing to acknowledge that you are not just going to fade away, that you have enduring presence, and that you matter. I really like the way that he put that together.
Beautifully said, Faith. And I agree, this definitely doesn't speak of a physical battle, but that mental and emotional one. So, stunning comment. And versus having read it, what did you think of it?
I think it should have music behind it. It has a great flow to it. And with brevities, actually, I think there should be like a times two at the bottom, and because it's one of those you can just, like, instantly repeat it just to kind of get a full feel or effect of what was said. But with brevity, it's one of those you have to look at the title to kind of get an overarching theme or idea that might be playing into the poem. And the idea of time stood still, so this singular moment that nothing else existed, was all that was, and then valuing homeostasis, this coming towards an equilibrium. So it's an interesting beginning right off from there. And as Faze was saying, that beginning, winded while at a standstill, breathless, the standard to win with integrity. I felt like I lost my life for a split second, the alliteration to it with all the S's. And it all just seems to flow into itself, where it really could be read with only one breath if one is capable of, like, remembering the words and everything. And so it reads as one phrase. And that idea of being winded while at a standstill, it happens if you do that reading the poem. So it kind of has a second layer to it, it feels like, of even more beyond what is being said, And, of course, the thinking before I speak, speak less to respect the flow of nature and regain the balance with this life force and trust that I won't fade away. That idea that even in silence, you will have some sort of mark on existence, and it's the wisdom of silence within words, ironically. So, yeah, it's a beautiful rite, very deep.
Oh, that was such an awesome comment versus. I love not only that you want to put music to it, but also how you mentioned that if we knew all the words, it could be read on one breath, which kind of gives you that breathless feeling, even as you sit there just reading it, making it almost a physical experience along with all the thought and the emotion that he brings to the piece. Stunning comment. Thank you for that. All right, and where are you going to take us to next in our last 20 minutes?
So, if you are okay with reading a poem, here is the next one going into the chat now.
Wait, what? You're going to make me read?
Yeah, you. You
well,
like,
darn. Here I thought I was just here to be the quirky person. All right. This is The Last Time by Allison Hodges. I don't know the last time I rode a horse. Would be the last time I rode a horse. I didn't know the last time I was kissed was the last time I would be kissed. I hurt for all the times that were the last, that were by me so callously overlooked. No one told me it was the last chance I had to say yes to a man. It was. I know it happened, but I still can't comprehend. So most of all, I missed the trip. When you had me in a trance, that one last time you winked at me and said, honey, shall we dance? And poem. Oh, I was messaging Allison when I asked her permission to read this, and reading it again, just it gives me goosebumps. So, Faith, would you mind starting us off with your thoughts?
Oh, wow. This hits you in the heart. That feeling of loss, and you know, when it's the end, either because you've lost someone, or if it seems because there's so many possible last times that she or her character are in a position where maybe they're unwell, and they know that they're not going to have any of this anymore. It's a devastating, you know, when you have to realize that. I know I went through that when I was convinced I was going to die for a little while, and it was like every time I saw anyone, I was like obsessed with the fact like that could be the last time I see them, so I have to end it on like saying something brilliant, which of course I never did. But it's just that feeling is so overwhelming. And I think she captures this here in terms of regret of when you don't realize it's the last time. So it's kind of the opposite, where I was expecting it to be the last time and it wasn't. She wasn't expecting it to be the last time, and she missed the chance to make it special. I really feel this. It's hard to even comment on the poem in a technical way because I feel it so strongly.
Oh, that was beautifully said, Faith. And you're right, there is something to be said about those moments that you do expect to be the last time, that you're prepared for it, but it's those moments that you just aren't, that sneak up on you unexpectedly, that just kind of stick with you. So beautifully said. And Versus, what did you think of this?
It's a great thought-provoking piece. That idea of not knowing something is going to be the last time that you've done something. And there's so many different things that this can apply to, but if, you know, each individual applies it to something that is perhaps something that they care about the most, like if I was suddenly no longer able to create words or speak words coherently, just to suddenly only speak gibberish, it would be one of those things where you would contemplate back to the last time you were ever capable of saying words. And then who knows, it could be something cruel, mean, or, you know, kind or beautiful. And I mean, that in and of itself could be its own encompassing, like, idea and poem. But to have that, like, never knowing when the last time you're going to kiss somebody was, but to be able to reflect back on it and be like, that was the last kiss I ever had so far. I mean, as long as, God willing, the poet is still alive, it is like you still have the opportunity to go forward and do something. It doesn't say it, but I guess it's my personal philosophy that with anything, it is the last time for now, or as of yet. Like, there's always the possibility that it can happen. It's up to the individual to make something happen that might lead to what they would like. So I think it's a beautiful poem that does talk about that rimming and the kind of regret of the last time so far.
That was a beautiful comment, Versus. And I do love that philosophy, that it's the last time so far. Because it's hard. It's hard to sit and think of the last time. And truly, you would hope that that finality came only with death. Truly. And, you know, as you were speaking, I kind of thought back to my friend, Amanda. Her husband had a stroke 2 months ago, June 17th. He was doing fine. He was thriving. They put him into a rehabilitation nursing home to kind of get him breathing on his own so he wasn't trached anymore. And due to medical neglect, he died. Septic shock, something that takes four different stages to get to. I remember at the beginning of this month, literally beginning of this month, August 1st, probably 2-3 days after I came home from going down to help her get her life in order, she had the nursing home called her and said, we're going to send him home in 10 days. It didn't happen. And now she has that last time. She's young. And while she may never get to kiss her husband again, she has hope to rebuild. She has hope to start over. And it may still not be the last time for her to be loved, even if it is not by him. And so I love that sentiment, because sometimes it's not perfect, but some things don't always have to be the last time. What I really appreciated about this poem is that I actually have had this thought myself quite often of wondering if this is the last time for stuff. You know, my eldest really doesn't take naps on me anymore. And so I try and think back to when was the last time that I carried her to bed? When was the last time that she took a nap on me? You never quite expect those. They kind of dwindle down, but it's always like, oh, it'll happen again. It just, eventually it doesn't. And you always think in those moments, well, maybe if I had known, I would have savored it more. If I had known, maybe I would have done something a little different. You know, if I knew that I wasn't going to get to ride a horse again, would I make sure that I took a day to really go and enjoy a horse ride in the mountains? How would I have done these things differently if I'd known? There's kind of that sadness in the loss of them, a sadness in understanding that possibly never again are these things going to happen. For whatever reason, personal choice, life just gets in the way, what have you. And I appreciate that poem for this, because there are a lot of times in our life, no matter our age, where we go through last times, and some of them are more poignant than others, but the fact remains that it happens, and we relive those moments, sometimes with regret. This ending, this man asks her, shall we dance? There's almost a tinge of regret to it, because suddenly there's not another opportunity to say yes. There's not going to be another wink and playfulness dancing with this man. and yet there's still beauty in it. There's still love. There's still perfection embodied in that memory, even though we did not get to have that sweet sense of closure. I think this is just a stunning piece that really makes you sit and ruminate on life and how it passes us by in ways that we don't always expect, and perhaps makes us appreciate each moment just a little bit more, with an understanding that sometimes things are the last time, but we just don't know it yet. It's a stunning rite. All right, we've got about 9 minutes left, and I know it's been a bit since we got to talk about what's going on with other shows, so I'm thinking we'll do one more poem versus, and then we'll wrap it up with hearing what Faith has going on this week. What do you guys think?
Sounds good to me.
I mean, I won't need 9 minutes, but sure, thanks.
I'll give you 5. How's that?
All right. So I just posted one up. This is Ocean of Memories by J.C. Anders, and I'll go ahead and give it a read. Alone at the edge of an ocean of memories, a heart of the deepest blue beats the slow monotony of the swaying metronome, found in the crashing of waves of a dark, desolate shore. The weeping wind with its hidden whispers murmurs her name. As flashes of night they walk together, haunt the torn fabric of his soul. Only consoled by the salty air, the softly kisses his tears away, leaving only moonlit-crusted trails as evidence. He drowns in a world of black, vicious ink that cloaks the stars with her faded words, a twilight filled with the vacant promises made below the pale deception of a cold moon. Its glow on the horizon, once a beacon of hope, now tragically dimmed. End poem.
Beautiful read versus a fantastic write by J.C. Anders. I really love this piece because it delves into the idea of standing on a beach. And if you've ever gotten to stand on a beach or be in the middle of the ocean during a full moon or at night, it's stunning because you have these black, inky depths that look so welcoming and terrifying at the same time. You know, there's nothing you can see. And I remember being... both when I lived in Daytona Beach and when I went on a sailboat cruise. It's hard to explain. It wasn't a big fancy one like you see at like Disney. They were old sailboats, like pirate ship sailboats. And there were 3 of them and you'd ride on one and it was really cool. But anyways, you got to see the ocean up close at night, and it was just in the morning you could see like 80 feet down, but at night it was black. And you did not know what was in the waters below you. And I think memories in the past can be a lot like that. They can be like the black ocean, but they're full of ink and pain and sadness and beautiful memories. And you never know what you're going to get when you jump in. You don't know if it will be warm and welcoming waters or if it will be this viscous ink that kind of just slowly drags you down into the dark abyss. The sadness that is captured in this, the idea that the moon once brought dreams of hope, now bring the pain and the sadness of hope that is lost, the way that her wind or her words whisper through the wind, capturing him and drawing him in, a reminder of how when we love so many times, it sticks with us. It holds on to us, and we don't always quite get away from it. Sometimes it just haunts a little bit more. It's full of beautiful imagery that, like this siren song of love lost, it kind of just draws you in and helps you drown in it, good, bad, or indifferent. Stunning, stunning piece. And Faith, what did you think of it?
I like the way that the tears are described, moonlit crested trails as evidence. because you picture like that kind of salt crust on the cheek, and it works with the salty air and the salt of the ocean, and the salt of his tears, of his body and the pain. It all has this salt to it. I thought that worked nicely, and I liked the pale deception of a cold moon. Something about the moon being deceptive, because you think that it's like this beacon of light when actually it's just a reflection of other light. It's the sun that's glowing, not the moon. And the moon was going to be hope, but actually it's just a cold chunk of rock, and maybe so was the opportunities that he lost, or the relationship lost. I thought this was beautiful.
That is such a fantastic comment. And I do love how you kind of bring in that the moon's light is kind of deceptive, because it's not the moon's light. It's just the sun's light mirroring us. Stunning, stunning comment. Thank you, Faith. And Versus, what did you think?
So I really like how it begins with a heart of the deepest blue beats the slow monotony of the swaying metronome. Where for me, after that, I just had like the waves slow crashing as like a subtle undertone for the rest of reading it. Of course, said, found in the crashing of waves of a dark, desolate shore. It kind of keeps timing for me. And whenever I see oceans, I always think of how water eats at the earth, and over time it erodes. It has that way of pulling things back into it. The ocean is very, like, rife with metaphor, especially when it comes to, like, that keeping of time. And this is one of those ones where time is kind of subtle within it, but I felt its presence throughout. And there's things like, as flashes of nights they walk together haunt the torn fabric of his soul, where this isn't just one night. This is multiple nights of going to this like specific location and experiencing certain things and having memories brought back and everything. So I think it's a very powerful write. And yeah, absolutely beautiful. Thank you very much, JC.
Beautifully said, Versus. All right, so we've got about 2 minutes. So with that, I'm going to hand the mic over to FaZe. And FaZe, tell me what you got going on this week.
Okay, on Double Helix, the Duke of St. Paul, Dex Bailey, is doing a contest on faith. How has your faith or lack of faith influenced your life and how you feel? So this is not about preaching what you believe in. It's about how faith makes you feel. And for Friday's parts, or I guess technically Saturday morning because it's after midnight, part sinner, part saint, the quote is, you should dance with the skeletons in your closet, learn their names so you can ask them to leave. Have coffee with your demons, ask them the important questions like, what keeps you here? Learn what doors they keep finding open and kick them out. So that is our prompt.
Oh, I love those. I love both of them. Those will be amazing. And I will definitely have to check out that faith one. Really fun topics. We do have Poison or Weaned in Poison this Wednesday for Blacklist Diaries, but The Strange Magic After Midnight. So be sure to check that out. Check out the contest topic in Late Night Poets if you'd like to see what we've got going on. We've got a bunch of shows. As FaZe knows, and Versus and everyone else, we've got them usually at 9 to midnight and midnight 30 to 2:30 every day of the week. Sometimes Saturdays are skipped. So be sure to check those out. I want to thank Versus for being a fantastic host, Laurent, Irish Rose, FaZe for calling in and sharing your beautiful words, Frank, who provided a stunning SoundCloud, as well as all the poets that allowed us to share your work. You guys are truly what makes these shows marvelous and fantastic. So I appreciate you all. And so with that, until next time, goodbye.
Bonne nuit, moi, ami.